You're listening to The Taste Masters with your hosts, David and Wyatt.
All right, guys, this one's super special episode. Just like all of them, we have the owners and founders of Holy Stone Distilling, Mike and Barbie. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're so glad to be here. Thanks for inviting us.
Of course. We're so glad you guys took the invite. You guys are slowly making a big name for you guys in local distilling in Utah. We've seen your bottles everywhere. They're the prettiest bottles on the shelves, I think. Wyatt and I can't stop looking at them.
Ah, thank you.
It's like a cool, like, prohibition kind of looking deal. I like it.
And also, you had cupcakes made by our good friend Melissa Diaz.
Melissa.
Yes, we love her.
And she's
I call
so
her the
rad.
Cupcake goddess.
And she is, though.
I mean, she really is.
And so, last night I was talking to her about, hey, guess who I'm bringing to the show? And she goes, shut up. Barbie and Mark are the coolest people ever. So, thank you guys for coming on. She's going to be jealous that I'm talking to you guys today. But your liquors, located in Murray, correct?
We are, yes. We're the only distillery in Murray.
And
so far.
What's that like to be the only distillery in Murray?
You know, it's good. We love Murray. Murray's been fantastic. The city is great to work with. They're very open to our kind of business model. And yeah, they've been awesome. We really like being there. It's a really cool city. Really cool city.
Are you guys both locally from Utah?
I'm from Utah.
No, I'm from Texas.
So am I.
No kidding. Out by Odessa, Midland, little town.
Oh, geez.
Yeah,
so I'm from the valley, very south. But yeah. Whataburger is still Whataburger, no matter where
no
you go.
No doubt, right? Texas. We need a Whataburger.
So I had my dad ship me some spicy ketchup the other day. So nice. I have spicy ketchup here in the state of Utah.
I'm jealous.
I'll grab you a bottle.
Yeah. Just to keep it handy.
Yeah. But yeah, so from Utah. So what's
I'm
it like
Utah.
Being from Utah and being a distiller? Do you guys distill at all by chance? Personally?
No, we have a distiller.
We have a distiller, Ethan, our business partner. Mm-hmm. He used to work at High West as a blender. He worked out in Oregon as a distiller, and then they brought him in to start down at Brick, and then we picked him up along the way, and we're pretty happy that we did, because
awesome.
He's responsible for everything that you see here, and whatever's in the bottle, that's Ethan's creation. We have a little collaborative effort, but I mean, honestly, he's the magic, so.
Wow.
That's cool.
He is so talented.
Is it just fun to watch him, guy? Just sit there and, wow.
Yeah, and I've learned a lot. I mean, I could make stuff that you could drink, but I don't know how good it would be.
wouldn't be the same calorie.
It wouldn't be the same, no.
It's different, right?
So, it's art and science. It's equal parts art and science, I think.
Yeah.
And just watching them do it, it's like, man, you can distill alcohol out of a solution, but making it taste good is a different animal.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So who is Holy Stone? Like, what's the purpose? Why? What's Holy Stone?
Well, since you love our bottles. We'll tell you about our labels.
Oh, please.
Michael, do you want to tell them? Since it's a Navy term.
I was a Navy guy. I was retired from the Navy, and I flew. I like to sail. Been all over the world sailing and flying airplanes. And so our label kind of is a throwback to the 30s, to the golden era of travel, when travel was really swanky.
Okay.
And one of our inspirations is a ship called the SS Normandy. And it was the most beautiful, most elegant ship of its day. Until the U.S. Navy took it over and was trying to turn it into a troop ship at the beginning of World War II and burn it to the waterline in New York Harbor.
Thanks, right.
Navy. Proud of you guys.
Go Navy.
Go Navy.
World's finest Navy.
Yeah, world's finest Navy. Just don't let us do any construction. This was a while back. But anyways, beautiful ship. It's always been something I've just always been in the back of my head because I like nautical history and history in general. And so when we started this distillery, these guys, actually, Ethan and Barbie, came up with the label, but it's kind of a nod to nautical travel and aviation. So we've got the octopus that's, you know, on the label, and he's got wings. Oh, sorry. So the winged octopus is kind of our thing. And it's cool. We like it. It's Art Deco, which was the era we're going for. Wow. And yeah, that's pretty much.
So the Holy Stone is at the top
the Holy
of the
Stone,
label.
Yeah.
This is the Holy Stone. Tell them about
the Holy Stone. So Holy Stone is a sandstone that they used to use to polish the decks of wooden ships. And it started hundreds of years ago with the Royal Navy. They found these pumice stones that were, these churches had fallen down. And so they used the pumice stones from the churches to polish the decks of the ships.
Interesting.
And they did it on their knees like they were praying. So, you know, some bosun or other came up with the idea of calling it a Holy Stone. You know.
Wow.
Nice. You said you were a pilot in the Navy?
Yes.
That's cool.
That's really
cool.
It
was fun, yeah.
Yeah, what'd you fly?
I flew C-130s mostly as I was an active duty guy in a reserve squadron, but gotcha. I flew some other things as well, but mostly C-130s.
Can C-130s take off from aircraft carriers?
They can and have, but we don't do that. You
gotcha.
Know, it's just, there's not
really impressive if you get those things to take off off an aircraft carrier.
Yeah, they have. Cool. There's some cool video of it out there, but they did some tests in the 60s or 70s.
Need a powerful sling.
You don't even need a sling. It'll do it on its under its own power. It's got great wing. The wing is huge, and it creates a bunch of lift. So,
gotcha.
Yeah, you don't need to be going very fast.
Really? That's cool. No kidding.
I think you and Wyatt may be best friends after this.
He's retired Navy, now he flies for FedEx.
Nice. That's cool, awesome.
So you guys can touch airplanes. After.
So you kept saying bosun. What's a bosun?
Okay, a bosun, back in the days of wooden ships and iron men, a bosun was the guy who ran the ship's deck. He was responsible for, the sails and, making sure the lines were properly, spliced and maintained and, and put away and all that stuff. So he was like the guy who ran the ship's deck. If it was going on above the deck, he was in charge of it.
Gotcha.
And now the bosuns do the same kind of job, on a ship, they make sure that everything's, going the way it's supposed to go on the ship's deck. So they're bosuns are famous in the Navy. They work hard and they play harder, so they're the guys you want whenever you're going to war. They're the guys you want to avoid on Liberty because you're going to jail.
There you go. So, and then your gin is named after the bosuns,
The bosuns. Yeah.
And that is that special to you, that little...
Yeah, I've always loved the bosuns. They're just, bosun's mates they're just a different breed of cat in the Navy. They're fantastic. They're my kind of guys. So I used to, I had a roommate who was a warrant officer, but he had started as a bosun's mate, E1 bosun's mate, seaman. And he was a really cool guy. So when I was thinking about naming a gin, I wanted to name it after one of the ship's crew, an enlisted member of the ship's crew, and he came to my mind first thing. So
that's awesome.
So Bosun's Gin, man, it's fantastic.
So then let's tell us about this gin you have. Like that's name of your gin is the Bosun's Gin.
Yeah.
So what about it? What's special about your gin?
It's a Navy strength gin, and it's a gin for gin lovers. So I don't really love gin that much, didn't love gin that much, but I've gotten such an appreciation for it now. And I go to Europe a lot, and gin's huge in Europe. And I test and try a lot of gins in Europe, and it is, there's a lot of great gins out there. There's a lot of bad gin out there, a lot of florally gin. It tastes like a glass of perfume. It's not that good to drink. And it's really, a lot of these gins have so many botanicals in them that it's hard to make a basic cocktail with these gins and make it taste right.
Okay.
And there's nothing wrong with having a million botanicals in your gin. If you can make them work together, that's great.
Right.
But you can taste five different things in your tongue, you can't taste 25 different things on your tongue. So I think that a lot of these gin manufacturers out there, they don't take the time to do the research and develop the flavor profiles that they need to develop to make all of those botanicals come together the way they should. There are a few exceptions. The Botanist gin, they spent years developing their recipe for their gin, and it's awesome. But we wanted to throw it back. We wanted to just, go the other direction. We wanted to make a gin that's very clean, very basic, but has a lot of character and body, but is juniper forward, but is not overwhelming with the juniper, so that you get the juniper, you're drinking gin now, and then it tapers off into other things. So our gin has four botanicals, and it's that we bottle it at 114 proof, so it's 57% alcohol.
There you go.
So called Navy Strength because
you can drink it and clean with it.
You can.
There you go.
Well, back in the day, the Navy used to, the reason I call it Navy Strength, if they wanted to test the gin and the rum that they were getting from the supplier at the dock, they would pour some on gunpowder, just a little pile of gunpowder. If they could still light the gunpowder, it was above 57% alcohol. That's where Navy Strength comes
from. Wow, I like that. So we try it. Do we have gunpowder?
I probably have some.
Should have brought some.
We should have tried.
He could have.
There yet.
Yeah. That's Utah first, so all of our spirits are Utah firsts. So there's the only Navy Strength gin.
In Utah.
In Utah.
So what's that like to be the only, the first? I feel like, I don't know.
It's cool,
it's super cool.
Well, and we look at it, we don't want to be the first Fireball. I mean, I don't know, they may have a Fireball. We don't need any more Fireball in the world.
Please dump all the Fireball ever.
So when we start looking at spirits and what we want to do, what we want to develop, is it something we want to drink? Okay. You know, that's the first thing. And the second thing is their market for it. Is it something anyone else would want to drink?
Okay.
And then, you know, where would we sit in that market? We haven't done rum for that reason. You know, Ethan's an award-winning rum distiller. And we haven't done rum because, you know, rum's kind of, the market's a little bit saturated with rum. And if we do it, whatever we do, we want to make it special. We don't just want to make another rum.
Just to make a rum.
Just to make a rum. Right. I mean, we even with vodka, that was our first product, and we wanted to have something that would pay the bills.
Okay.
You know, so vodka is a good spirit to pay the bills. It's 32% of the market in the U.S., I think.
Wow.
So,
big chunk.
Yeah, so it's a big chunk of the market, and it, I mean, it's kind of dumb not to make vodka if you can do it right. But we wanted to do it really, really good.
Okay.
So when we started making our vodka, we decided, you know, we tested a bunch of different spirits for a base, and we came up with grappa because we all love grappa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
And so we make our vodka out of a grape spirit. It's basically grappa that's, you know, not, it hasn't been proofed down. So it comes to us, I think it's 88% alcohol. We distill it through our column still. And turn it into vodka.
That's beautiful. And you're getting your grapes from California, if I recall.
Yeah, we're getting our grappa from California.
Beautiful. And the one you're talking about is your Perla vodka.
Perla vodka, yeah.
So what's the special meaning between Perla? Like, why Perla?
That's Barbie.
It means pearl in Italian. And so everything is sort of a nod to the sea, you know, nautical flair. So that's the only gem that comes from the sea.
And I'm assuming, Barbie, that you're the secret gem of Holy Stone.
Absolutely.
You're the Perla.
I don't know about that, but, you know.
She's the Perla. It's so Zorro's much fun. The bosun.
There you go.
As you can tell.
I love it.
He's in charge. We work for him.
But I love that you guys are doing this and you guys are distilling it. And you guys do give tours at your distillery.
Absolutely give tours.
So I found
and tastings.
And tastings, which is even better. Yeah.
Luxury tours and tastings.
Yeah, we have a really sweet tasting lounge. It's it looks like, okay, so our distillery, I'll just give you a little thing on that. So our distillery is, like I said, the USS Normandy. We kind of designed it to be a nod to that ship. So on one side of the bulkhead, we call it in the Navy, the wall, there's, it's swanky and nice, and really it's where the passenger compartments would be. On the other side, it's, you know, bare bones, industrial, and, you know, and it's where really cool. The engine room would be. It's where the work gets done, you know? And so if you walk up the stairs, the ladder in the Navy, and you go through the door into this tasting lounge, it's a whole different world. It's just this beautiful, Art Deco, cool, swanky, comfortable place to sit and have a tasting and just hang out.
I'm loving that word you're using, swanky. That's probably my new favorite word right now.
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
I love that. But like, I get what you're saying when you're saying that.
Yeah.
And why aren't we there right now? Why didn't we do this?
Why did we not do it there, man? We absolutely.
And you're welcome anytime.
And then I wouldn't have been late.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, not that you were late this time. You were just on time. But that place is open. You guys are open Thursdays 3 to 7 and Friday and Saturday 3 to 8.
Correct.
That's correct.
So you guys go to Holy Stone Distilling for a tasting and a tour. That'd be awesome. Is Ethan always there by chance?
No, but if we're going to have a tour and somebody says they would like to talk to the distiller, you know, something like that,
right.
If he can be there, he'll be there.
That's really cool. And High West, I didn't know he, that's awesome. High West is a big deal in Utah. It's
well
renowned.
Yeah. And they're good friends of ours. I mean, everybody over there, we've developed a really good relationship because of Ethan.
That's good. Because I was thinking, if you look at the craft beer scene, because, you know, our podcast, we like to do we talk to a lot of brewers, and the craft brewery scene it's a community.
Yeah.
And I feel like Utah, which I'm grateful to be here, is they're all together. It's not like, oh, we're better than them. I've never heard that once. So Sugar House is out there. You guys have now Clearwater's now a new one, right?
Yeah, Clearwater's a new one.
And so it's not like you guys, and you said it yourself earlier, you don't diss on them. You kind of all help each other out, which is super cool. And I feel like it's unique to Utah.
Yeah, it is. Now, the distillers in Utah are not as tight-knit a family as the brewers. The brewers are impressive. Okay. I mean, these guys, they stick together. They help each other out.
Really
they do all this
it's
stuff.
It's fascinating.
And now, the distillers they're not mean to each other, but I really love the family-type atmosphere that the brewing scene has in Utah. Those guys they're really doing it right in Utah.
And do you see that happening for distillers?
I maybe, you know, it's a different kind of animal. We have, you know, a bunch of different rules that we follow, and it's not as big a scene, you know, and there's just, I don't know. It's just a different type of person that gets into that world as opposed to brewing. So a lot more, it's not that there's more competition. It's just, there's a lot less time, I think.
Okay.
And a lot less, opportunity for distillers to
right.
come together. That's not to say we don't. We work with other distillers all the time. We work pretty closely with Mountain West Cider, hard cider.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, those guys are really good. I was just on the phone with Jeff.
Rob,
those guys
Alpine
are really
distilling.
Yeah, we work with Rob and Alpine Distilling. You know, I mean, I'm not dissing on the other distillers at all. They're great people, and we have some incredibly talented distillers in Utah. But you know, it's a different scene than the brewers. The brewers, it's like, I don't know, man. They just have a lot of fun.
It's a weird brotherhood. It's just a bunch of guys. It's like a frat almost.
It really is.
It's interesting. But it's so fun.
It's cool.
I'm impressed, man. They're so supportive
of each other.
And it's fun to be a part of and we're trying to get that appreciation to their craft because you guys are making a craft yourself. Because this is really cool. This is really awesome. And what baffles me is I have no idea what this shochu one is. So I was looking at it.
Most people don't.
I'm like, what the hell is that? You think of liquors, you think vodka, you know, whiskey,
right.
gin, all, and what the hell is a shochu? And so, you know, doing my research on it and seeing the tsunami, I need to know what the hell this is. So what is this shochu?
Okay, shochu is it's shochu, soju, shochu, depending on if you're in Japan, Korea, or China.
Okay.
And it's actually, from what I've been reading, it's the best-selling spirit in the world because, you know,
outside
a lot of Chinese, outside of the U.S., because a lot of Asian people drink that stuff. And it's really good. And I've been drinking shochu and soju for a long time.
Outside the United States?
Oh, yeah. I spend a lot of time overseas because of my job.
Maybe, yeah.
So, yeah, well, and fly for FedEx. So, you know, I'm in Japan a lot. I'm in Korea a lot.
A fair amount of time in Okinawa.
I not with FedEx, but with the Navy, I was there a few times. Yeah.
And Barbie, have you traveled out there at all?
Not to Asia yet.
Not yet. Keyword. No. I heard that.
Yeah,
yet.
I know.
I'd like to, but when he's flying, he's working.
Right. Yeah. I'm there for 24 hours, 48 hours.
He's flying around the globe.
Yeah. So you chased it, the true stuff, if you will.
Yeah. And okay. So the Japanese especially are very much perfectionists about a lot of things. And so there's different levels of things, you know, so like shochu or shochu, if you have to distill it more than once or you have to filter it or all these other things, then it's considered a lesser product than if it's a single distillation, unfiltered thing. So if, in their mind, if you can't drink it right out of the still, then you put it in the cheap aisle
right.
and the cheap booze aisle.
It's inferior.
It's inferior.
Sense. More pure.
Just distill it again to make vodka, I guess.
Yeah. But it's what it is. There's they generally use one of four different starches to ferment and turn into alcohol. So it's usually either sweet potato, rice, barley, or wheat.
Okay.
And or a combination of those.
Sweet potato. I've never heard of a spirit made with sweet potato.
It's actually really good too.
Sesame seeds they use.
Yeah, and they
well.
Also they well that's an addition to so they'll flavor it with sesame seeds and other things, but there's a really good one out there that has smoked sesame seeds in it. That's
in the States or outside?
No, it's up at Post Office.
If you go to Post Office Place, ask Crystal about her
shochu. By Takashi, right next to Takashi.
Okay, absolutely.
Yeah,
she's so knowledgeable.
Yeah, so it's a low proof spirit. It's designed to be a low proof spirit. A lot of people don't. A lot of people now make it 80 proof, but ours is 50 proof.
Jeez.
So it's a lower proof spirit, but ours is made with koji rice and barley. So koji rice, what they do is you make rice and then you inoculate it with a mold, a koji mold, and then you maintain the rice at a certain temperature and humidity, and Ethan takes care of all that. And then once it's all fully inoculated, you ferment it and then distill the alcohol out of that solution. Mm.
That's where a lot of that rice. Complexity comes from. If you guys want to sip
you a lot of umami.
You can...
Is that how you usually drink this? Is neat or
yeah?
On the rocks?
I mean, in Asia they do it as a highball always.
Yeah, all the time.
Okay. Just with some ice in a tall glass.
Yeah,
but it's gorgeous
in
cocktails. It's in your cocktail.
Is that
vodka and
right
shochu.
Yeah,
you'll taste that complexity. That umami comes through. Some people say bread. Some people say smoke, tobacco.
Right.
Just adds this really cool complexity.
And why tsunami?
Well, we like the name just because it kind of fits with our stuff, but we also, we're working, one of our launch customer was Tsunami Sushi as well.
Oh,
so it also helped with their, you know, their branding as well. So, you know,
it's
we're like, yeah, we love the name anyway. So, and it helped
with
their branding.
Theme.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it sticks with the theme and it works great for Japan.
Yeah.
You know, and the spirit. You know, or
he was
origin.
There when the big tsunami
I was there
happened.
When the earthquake hit. I was in Narita when the earthquake hit.
And he said, can I go back in and go
it
back
to
bed?
It was rocking and rolling.
Jeez.
Pretty good. You couldn't stand up.
Wow. That's Mother Nature's a beast. I mean, that's just
oh, yeah,
proof
especially
of it right there.
I heard something the other day that like the island of Japan and like because Japan's part of a big archipelago, right?
Yeah.
And like all of those islands receive like something like 30% of the world's earthquakes, yeah, like in that one archipelago.
Wow. It happens all the time, man.
Yeah.
Every time I'm there, almost, well, not every time I'm there, but a lot of times when I'm there, you'll get a little tremor, you know, or a little shaking going on. It's that was a big one. Yeah. I was impressed.
Yes.
He called me. Wow. I was watching the news and I knew he was in Japan and I said, are you coming home? He said, all the airports are flooded. I'm in the back of, you know, a car. And he said, baby, hold on a second. And then he says to his driver very calmly, move out from underneath that bridge because it's going to collapse on us.
Oh, Jesus.
And then he comes back and he goes, okay, baby. And as they drove under the freeway bridge, the whole thing came down.
Wow.
He's very calm under pressure, though. This is his military.
It was knocking some things down. It was fine. It was, you know, it was just a crazy day.
Yeah, I bet. Wow. Yeah.
It was crazy.
But then
you
got to do cool things like they got to replenish the farms afterwards. So he'd take millions of like baby chicks, you know, in the back of FedEx planes and.
Yeah, that's super cool.
Yeah, it was cool. It was loud. Baby chicks are crazy.
I bet.
It sounded like a beehive. It was the weirdest sound.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. We're just talking about your spirit and all that story. Like, we were talking about when Wyatt and I drink a beer, sometimes you drink someone's craft beer, and it somehow brings up a memory. It brings up something for you. And most of my favorites is when we're smelling something and Wyatt will bring up he calls it the horse blanket. He just has a smell of like a farm. Right. Or what his growing up with his grandparents, and that this liquor, I mean, the spirit has a story with that, and that's like I'm looking at this like, well, I'm never gonna look at this the same. And like it's awesome.
Definitely changes the way you look at things. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
and it makes it more powerful, makes it more real, more to you.
Then you're part of our Holy Stone family.
I love it. I'm sign me up.
Well, you're in, man. Absolutely.
And so the one that I'm fascinated about. That one just surreal to me because the sweet potato. You said barley, wheat.
Yeah, we do ours with barley and rice, but some people do it with sweet potato, wheat, and, you know, like a really clean, sweet shochu will just be rice.
Okay.
You know, and it's just, it tastes like vodka, kind of, you know, but barley gives it an umami, an earthiness that you don't get with much else that I can think of, you know, and then the koji rice adds to that. It adds this cool, exotic element to that umami, earthing protein thing that's going on in there. You know, so sweet potato is also another really good one. It's an interesting flavor profile, but ours, you get that. It's really cool because the nose is different than the palate on the first sip. Cause you know, the first thing you do is you smell a drink when go to drink it. So when you go to drink this, you smell it, you'll be like, never smelled anything like that before. Right. And then you taste it, you'll be like, that doesn't taste anything like it smells. And then for me, every time after that, they match up. But the first time, every time that I pour one, the first time I'm like, that's a different smell than the flavor profile. It's pretty cool. It's an interesting spirit. And we use it a lot in cocktails now because it's just it adds such a cool element to most cocktails. And we've also been substituting out vermouth and adding that instead of vermouth.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Like, do you substitute out dry vermouth or sweet vermouth?
Dry vermouth or sweet vermouth, you know?
So you can make like
make it a different...
That would make a really interesting, with your gin and the shoshu, would make a super interesting martini.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
Would you add like some lemon to that, or how would you...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, it really goes well with any kind of citrus, any kind of fruit, you know, because it balances out the umami...
Maybe lime?
Yeah, right? Lime works great. Yuzu.
Didn't old sailors, didn't they take limes?
Yeah.
So they wouldn't get
scurvy.
Scurvy. That's mm-hmm. what it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. And there are three really talented bartenders who are using the shochu for the Cheers to Cocktails Salt Lake Magazine contest right now.
So we saw that. We saw the article you sent us was the bartenders, and those were fascinating, gorgeous
cocktails. They're so beautiful. You guys should go taste them.
And so they're using your spirits in it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's really fascinating. So do you guys... Are you guys able to try these? Have you tried the cocktails they've made?
We've tried all of them except the one from HSL. We're planning on going tonight.
Yeah. Fantastic.
But we've tried the one from Lake Effect. It's gorgeous. And the one from Salt Lake City Eatery is so beautiful to look at and sip. That's the one
the
that has the egg foam.
Right,
and
the three dots on the
side.
Yeah,
and it has those are crushed pop rocks with jasmine, dried jasmine flowers, and then three drops of Locals bitters.
And that's awesome.
Yeah.
So beautiful. And it has the gin and the shochu. The other ones have gin and shochu, but are just shochu, sorry. But they're beautiful. And the Salt Lake City Eatery is doing a cocktail kit. So if you didn't want to go in, you can pick up the cocktail kit and then get the spirits from us. Because the shochu is only in our distillery. Everything else you can get.
And why is that? Why is that not located? Why can't
we just
get
haven't
that?
Really?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. One, we haven't really tried to get it in the liquor store yet for two reasons. It's a really lengthy process to make shochu. It takes a while.
Okay.
I mean, like between fermenting and inoculating the rice
and all that stuff. And then, you know, a lot of it, you know, goes to restaurants. So, and we want to make sure that we always have enough on stock for those guys so that people can enjoy it. But we keep enough for people to come in and buy it. But we have, you know, we have a lot going on, and making shochu to stock the stores, the shelves would be, you know, it'd be another element in our production process, our schedule, that we're going to get to the point where we have that, we can fit that into our schedule, but we're not quite there yet. We're coming out with a new product, and that's been taking a little bit of our time. And then
precedence on that one.
Yeah. And then we've gotten another order from the DABC, which has been taking a bit of our time.
But
and then
DABC,
the COVID thing hit and it kind of put the crunch on everybody. So it just didn't make a lot of sense. Plus the biggest hurdle that we have is a DABC. Somebody asked the DABC, one of the restaurants, about carrying shochu, and they said, we're not carrying shochu for any reason. So the DABC was refusing, apparently, to carry any shochu. Apparently, they've done it before.
They said it doesn't make them any money.
Didn't sell.
Doesn't make them any money. We talk about the DABC a lot, so let's touch on that one. I was going to wait on this conversation until later,
nice segue.
But I say we do it now, because the DABC seems to be a pain in the ass for most of us. A lot of people, I tell people not to get any type of liquor or beer at the DABC. If you can, just not to, because they don't store it well. It's upcharged. Like, they probably... And you guys have, you know, headache with the DABC. It's a pain in the ass for you guys. But the fact that they won't even put their own product, like their own local stuff, and promote that is beyond, I can't comprehend that.
I have a love-hate relationship with the DABC. There's some things about the DABC that I really love, and Barbie can touch on this as well. And there's some things about the DABC I really, really, really hate.
Right.
You know, as far as... You know, for a consumer, the good thing about the DABC is the prices are really good because they only charge a set amount. So what'll do, let's say you want to buy a bottle of Pappy Van Winkle.
Okay.
You know, it'll go in here, it'll go through an auction, a lottery to get it. But what the DABC will do is they'll purchase that bottle, they'll purchase cases of it at wholesale. They'll mark it up 88% and they'll sell it to you at that price. So you can get good, really high-end alcohol, wine, spirits, whatever, at a really good price in Utah that you can't find anywhere else in the country, because the secondary, they'll price, other places will price it according to the secondary market, whatever secondary market will bear. Like, so a bottle of Pappy Van Winkle that you can get for $350 here or whatever it costs, you might have to pay $2,000 in other places.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that is a good thing about the DABC, and it's really good for the consumer. Another good thing about the DABC for us is they have a small producer discount. So they pay us a little bit more since we don't make a lot of product yet. And then once you get past a certain level of production, they will stop giving you that discount and charge you the full rate.
Right.
But I mean, that's a good thing. And I like the fact that I don't have to go out and sell to every liquor store in the state of Utah. I sell to
one. That'd be a pain in the ass.
Yeah. So those are good things. And the DABC, they're limited by the legislature to a large degree about what they can do. Mm-hmm. Now, that said, the DABC could do things a lot better. They could do things a lot smarter. They could get rid of Symphony, that insane system that they use to determine what they're going to put on the shelves. The DABC could be proactive and make Utah the single best liquor market in the country. The tools are there, the opportunities there, but the DABC refuses to do that. They use the excuse, I'm following the rules of the legislature, but they're following the rules of the legislature in a way that is easiest for the DABC.
Correct.
Not best for the consumer or best for local. Mm. And there's a lot. I mean, I could go on for hours about the DABC and the legislature and the challenges they pose to local manufacturers, and we'll probably end up, I've got a bunch of stuff going on with Robert Alpine Distilling and some other people. I've been talking to him. He's a member of the board of the DABC. And, you know, we're trying to get some legislation pushed through that will change some of these things. We're slowly getting there, but I'm hoping that it doesn't come to other measures to, you know, move the DABC along.
Right. So with that being said, how or what can be done? Us as a consumer, What can we do to help change or help better legislation when it comes to DABC?
Go ahead, Mike.
Okay, well, a few things that you can do that are really, really helpful. First of all, write and call and bug them, you know, because if they keep hearing from consumers, because all the DABC hears, here's what the DABC sees. They say, during a pandemic, we've sold more alcohol than at any other time our existence. Mm-hmm. But it's all like, you know, hey, here's a $12 liter of Scotch or a liter of vodka. You know, they're selling, you know, that at those lower price points because people are worried about the future. They don't know if they're going to have a job next week. You know, so yeah, they're going to sell a lot of booze because they're stuck at home. They're going to sell a lot of lower price point alcohol because, you know, people are saving money. I don't blame them. But the DABC sees the bottom line. The DABC runs itself like a private business, but it's not. It's a taxpayer-funded entity like the DMV. They're here to provide a service to the taxpayers who pay their light bill. But they don't look at it like that. They look at themselves like a business. That's where the Symphony program comes in, which came from the grocery store industry. It's an inventory management program, and it does not work for us, for Utah, for you. It doesn't work for consumers. It doesn't work for producers because what they do is they say, well, this didn't sell very well. We're moving it off the shelf. We're going to replace it with this other thing that we know will sell very well. Like, okay, you might not ever get a chance. You know, if the DABC has their way, you won't have a chance to buy our vodka or Five Wives vodka. Well, Five Wives sells really well, but you know, a local vodka because Stoli will outperform it because it's a national brand and it's easier.
And
they
force us to compete with Stoli.
They force us to compete with those national brands on a level playing field that isn't level at all.
No, not at all.
Yeah. So they'll delist you if you're the bottom performer
they'll take you off.
They'll take you off, right? Even though you're local, but you know, it's just crazy.
And they don't put you in every liquor store.
And they don't put you in every liquor store. So you're competing with these guys and they'll tell you, you know, it's a per store per day basis that you're competing. My absinthe is the number one selling absinthe in the state of Utah. I'm in seven stores with my absinthe. Other absinthe, Lucid and Absinthe. Mm-hmm.
Is that the one with the Van Gogh?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absinthe. Yeah, they're in every store.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
beating them. But I can't get in every store. So it's all bullshit,
weird.
Man.
Yeah, it is.
It's all, and I'm trying to get, I'm going to have a meeting next week, hopefully with some people at the DABC and talk to them about this. But I mean, yeah. So what can you do? You can one, write and call. Two, go to your local liquor store and request that they bring in local products, whatever you're interested in. If you want, you know, if you want single malt whiskey from Sugar House and they don't carry it, ask them to carry it. If you want absinthe from Holy Stone Distilling, ask them to carry it. Ask them to bring it in and keep bugging them and bugging them and bugging them. And eventually the manager will say, well, I'm just going to bring a case in, you know? And then once that happens, then...
And watch them sell through that case.
Watch them sell through that case, yeah. Right?
It does help us if you go to the liquor store. And those prices are set. We can't discount.
Yeah, we can't do anything with the prices. It helps... strategically, it helps us if you go to the liquor store to buy it because... It keeps our numbers up.
You don't have one in a certain liquor store, and all of a sudden you now have product in that liquor store that you had a hard time getting into.
Yeah, exactly.
But magically, Post Malone's wine is now in every single
It came out in every liquor store. I'm like, hasn't sold a bottle yet.
Isn't it magic?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that existed. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah. So, you know, so strategically, it helps us to go into every liquor store. We actually get a better price point because there was some distribution fees that we don't pay. It's a tax that we don't pay if you buy from us. So it's, you know, we get more money in our bank account right now, but strategically it's better at this point for a new distillery to get the exposure.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
it's good to know.
Yeah. So it's
half of one.
It's sixes in a way, but I mean, I love it when people say, hey, I went to the liquor store and they didn't carry your product. So I asked them to carry it and they're going to buy a case. You know, I'm like, awesome. That's great.
That's super rad.
Yeah. That's fantastic. So, and we just had a guy, I think it was at Poplar. I guess he walked in to Poplar and said, do you guys have Holy Stone's vodka? And the guy's like, no, we don't have it yet. Or we're out of it. And he's like, and I guess he got mad and turned around and left. He's like, I can't believe you don't have that. It's local. Turn around and left. I'm like, awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. And any bar you go to, ask your bar manager, can you carry this?
Yeah.
We're looking for a bar that carries this.
Yeah. I mean, and for us and for, you know, any small new distillery, what really helps us is bar sales, restaurant sales, because that's what makes people aware of your product. You know, people walk in, they sit at the bar and they order a drink. And, you know, bartenders are our best salespeople.
Right.
You know, they always are. They're our best reps.
They're amazing.
And, yeah, they're amazing. We love our bartenders and they do us really, really good. So, you know, that's those things will help. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, tell your friends. Write the DABC, call the DABC, ask your...
And social media, because social media is a great platform right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's blowing up. It's free marketing for you guys. Like, that's awesome. That's super
fantastic.
Cool.
That's fantastic, yeah. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And so, going off of that, you were talking about your absinthe, which I have a friend who's obsessed with absinthe.
Yeah.
Now, number one selling one in Utah, which I had no idea.
Yeah.
So, I want to do a little history about the absinthe. Is absinthe something you guys... Why absinthe? Why'd you guys try to go for one that, in my mind, is like this secret psychedelic evil?
Makes you murder your family.
Oh, right? So,
the most misunderstood spirit
exactly.
in the world.
So why'd you go and try to tackle that beast?
Well, you know, it's funny. I honestly, I have had it occasionally, but I don't like licorice at all.
Okay.
And so Ethan brought up absinthe. He's like, I think we should make absinthe. And he wanted to make it. You could tell. And I remember saying, okay, like, let's do a run of absinthe. And I was thinking to myself.
You gave him the go ahead.
Yeah.
You gave him the blessing.
Yeah.
The keys to the car. And like, here you go.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, exactly. It's a collaborative effort. But, you know, I was like, in my brain, I said, it'd be cool. We can make absinthe. We don't have a Utah absinthe. It'll be awesome to be the first Utah absinthe.
Yeah. And, there's not one in Utah.
You guys are welcome to taste anything.
And then I was like, well, you know, we'll probably sell our first run in a year. And then do it again. It'll be a seasonal thing. Yeah. It just took off. It was crazy.
So
like sold out in like a month. And
yeah. I was like, it was sold out almost immediately. And we're like, we need to make more absinthe. So then we just started running with it and it's been going crazy.
Tell them the history about it.
So
most
absinthe,
people think
you know,
wormwood's illegal.
Yeah. So what happened was back in the day in the late 1800s, absinthe was taking over market share from the wine industry in Europe. So, they started a smear campaign against absinthe and got it banned in Europe. They were telling people that, you know, wormwood is a psychedelic, has psychedelic properties that'll make you crazy and psychotic. You'll kill your family, you'll cut your ear off. And just, you know, some guy killed his family. He was drunk on absinthe. He was also high on opium, you know, which might have had something to do with
maybe.
It. Yeah.
And he was mentally ill.
And he was mentally ill. And, you know, there's all kinds of
cut
stuff.
Cut your ear off? Too.
Yeah.
And then
same
maybe
thing.
Draw some really nice paintings.
And draw some great Starry Nights.
Yeah, exactly. You know, get stoned, you know, as hell and then drink some absinthe
absolutely.
And you're a good artist. I could probably do that.
Probably.
Got it. But maybe. Yeah, so anyway, so absinthe, you know, they got this smear campaign. It was very effective and they got absinthe outlawed in Europe for a long time. And it was outlawed here in the U.S. for a while, but then I don't know how the law went away, but it sunsetted or was overtaken by another law or something anyway. But the law went away and no one knew it. So around, 2007 or so, there were some guys, I think, in New Orleans who were making absinthe on the sly. And then they started researching it to find out what they could do to sell it. You know,
okay.
How could we bring this into the market, maybe not call it absinthe or whatever. And they realized there was no law against it. They couldn't find a law. So they called the TTB and talked to the TTB. And the TTB said, we're going to make absinthe. And they said, you can't make absinthe. Show us the law. And they couldn't find it. So they realized there was no law against making absinthe, but the TTB went nuts and said, you can't make absinthe until we come up with a memorandum of understanding of how absinthe is to be made, what the label looks like, what you can call it, all this stuff. So now absinthe is a pain to make or pain to get certified to make, because what you have to do is you have to develop a recipe, send a sample to the TTB. They'll run it through a spectrometer. They'll make sure that it doesn't have more than 400, I think it is, 400, if I got the number right, parts per million of thujone, which is a chemical compound in wormwood that you could not possibly do in nature. You could not get that concentration of thujone. But they want to make sure. So you go through this, jump through this hoop, you send them your sample, they test it for thujone, they send it back to you and say, your sample's good, we approve your recipe.
Okay.
Then you have to get the label approved. That's a whole different ball of
wax.
Why so specific about the label?
Well, you can't call it absinthe, first of all. You have to call it absinthe vert or vert. You have to call it absente. You have to spell it different. You have to misspell it. You can do anything but call it absinthe. Ours was absinthe, and they made us change it. So you have to also have a disclaimer on the front or something. Like ours says, you know, infused neutral grain spirits infused with botanicals or something like that. I can't remember, but you have to have that kind of thing on the front. There's a lot of verbiage, and there's even at the TTB, they don't understand They have no idea what absinthe is. They are clueless. The lady we talked to at the TTB told us that she had been sent by the federal government to Europe to go visit...
To do research on spirits.
But when she went, they told her, whatever you do, don't drink absinthe, because if you do and you come back and you take your analysis, you'll pop positive for drugs.
You'll die and kill everyone. Yeah, absolutely.
And she told us that. I'm like, that is absolutely not true. There is not a single drug in that. You can drink that and go do your analysis while you're drunk and not, you know, have anything happen to you. But, I mean, that's the kind of information that the federal government, who's overseeing this, misleading, like you said.
They just don't know. This Thujone, is that the chemical everyone's afraid of?
Yes.
Yes.
It comes from wormwood.
Okay.
And there is
super
wormwood.
High concentrations. It's a carcinogenic, I guess. It's dangerous, healthy if to your health in super high concentrations, but in normal concentrations, there's nothing to it.
You would die from blood alcohol poisoning long before you died from Thujone poisoning.
And that's the wormwood that everyone thinks is scary and deadly.
Yeah, and with our absinthe, you could possibly die from blood alcohol poisoning.
I 123 proof.
You tested that out.
I tested it. A friend of mine and I were out in the middle of Mojave Desert four-wheeling, and we went through an entire bottle one night. I didn't realize that we had gone through that much. And
snuck up on you.
Well, I didn't even think I was drunk, but my legs didn't work.
Oh,
it makes a really beautiful mojito that we call All a Dream.
Yeah.
And it's so delicious.
Yeah, what's this sediment in the bottom of the bottle?
Okay, now that's a
good question.
That's a great question. So our absinthe is all natural. So when you make when you see an absinthe on the shelf, if it's got this fluorescent green color, that's not a color found in nature. You don't get that through a natural process. So our absinthe is all natural. Our green comes from fennel. And one of the things that happens when you distill and use fennel. We do a single distillation and a double infusion. So when you infuse with fennel, you're going to get some sediment out of the fennel because it's just.
Do you use like the seeds or do you use the whole stock or
seeds?
The seeds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we use fennel and you'll get some sediment from the fennel and we don't filter it at all. So when you see the sediment in there, that's because it's all natural. That's from the fennel.
Nice.
It's like a bottle of really beautiful wine.
Yeah. So you get a little bit of sediment in the bottom, and that's perfectly normal.
You guys set the bar pretty high.
Thanks.
I'm just telling you that right now. Like, that's...
Everything's ultra premium. We won double gold for the vodka, double gold for the gin, gold for the absinthe, and we haven't entered shochu yet.
Yet's key word. Yeah. There it is again, Barbie. Yet.
I know. I want to get that feather in Ethan's cap for, you know, maybe enter in the Japanese... competition.
So the last time I did absinthe or had absinthe, my friends had a slotted spoon. And with the slotted spoon, what they did was they lit it on fire. And then all of a sudden this cube of sugar is on fire. And they poured the absinthe over it and dropped it. And I lost my shit. I'm like, what? You want me to drink fire flamed absinthe? Go away. So I did the absinthe. Is that the one you talked about with Van Gogh or whatever? Yeah. And the first time I ever did absinthe, I actually drank and inhaled it at the same time. So I was I inhaled like licorice-y death, and I hated it. So I had a little scare. It was probably 8 years ago. I had a little scare.
And you don't have to drink it like that. Most people don't light the cubes on fire. That's just all kind of a magic show.
But I heard that's a French thing. I don't know if that was correct or not, but that's kind of a trick, if you will.
The original absinthe cocktail goes like this. You pour your absinthe in.
It's a slow pour, if you will, right?
You pour your absinthe in a glass.
Okay.
And you set the glass underneath an absinthe fountain, which is, it's going to have ice water in it.
Right.
You put the spoon on there, the absinthe spoon, and a sugar cube, and you drizzle the water over the sugar cube into your glass until you've added about five times as much water as alcohol, because absinthe is a high proof spirit.
Oh, you guys, obviously you guys made a high one.
Yeah, and ours on the low end of absinthe.
Oh, really?
Yeah, wow. I mean, it's, you know, 140 is not that abnormal with absinthe. 140 proof.
140 proof.
Yeah, it's not that abnormal, and ours on the low end because, and I'll tell you how we determine what we want to do with that in a minute, but so when you drizzle the water over the sugar cube, it gets rid of the bitterness or, you know, tones down the bitterness with the sugar, and it brings the alcohol content down with the water, so it makes it a more normal spirit. And then in a lot of cases, an absinthe will do what's called louching. It'll turn this milky green color. Ours doesn't louche very well.
Do you want it to louche typically?
No, we don't care. Okay. You know, honestly, there's a lot of people out there who get a really I don't know. They get really wrapped around the axle about louching, and we don't care.
Okay.
And the reason we don't care is I'm not going for the parlor trick of, you know, my having my stuff change colors. I want it to taste good.
Okay.
You know, that's my only concern. I want it to be a delicious spirit that you want to drink. I don't care. I mean, I can make it turn whatever color you want, but it's not going to taste the same.
Fascinating. This is very fascinating to me. Because during my research, I was seeing, you know, portrayed as a dangerous, addictive, psychedelic drug, you know, supposedly.
Yeah.
And then banned 1915, banned in the United States. And then I was told that the chlorophyll to the absinthe treats it like tannin does in wine.
Probably.
And I was going to ask you guys if you knew anything about that. Because you said the phenol, so that green doesn't come from...
That green comes from phenol.
From phenol itself.
Yeah, so the way we do it is we infuse it. Mm-hmm. For about a week, and then we distill it, and then we infuse it for about a day to get the final color and the final flavor.
So you really could change it any color.
Yeah. Mm. We could turn it whatever you want. We could add more fennel, and it would louche just like everything else, but it wouldn't taste the same.
So then you're saying with that fountain, so basically you'd have absinthe kind of watered down, if you will.
Exactly.
And sugared
you're just diluting
down
it
a little bit.
You're just diluting the proof.
So instead of sitting there just... knocking yourself up, you're actually enjoying...
You're enjoying a nice cocktail.
Cocktail-ish,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
And but all of our spirits are designed to sip neat because they're ultra-premium, but
and that's,
they're over the top when you put them in a cocktail. Absinthe in a cocktail is amazing.
Really good.
What cocktails do you make with absinthe?
Oh my gosh, there's so
many. We make a lot. We've made up our own.
Go visit the Rest. Have you guys eaten there? Their bartenders. You haven't eaten there?
It's an underground
speakeasy.
Yeah, but there's classic cocktails like Corpse Reviver, Death in the Afternoon, what's the one we made at the contest?
Hemingway's Obsession, which is Rhea, she works for us.
Monkey,
she just created
Monkey
it.
Gland.
Oh, Monkey Gland has orange juice in it. But
there's only one I've seen, and it was like absinthe and champagne.
Yeah, that's Death in the Afternoon.
Uh-huh. Right.
Yeah. But people are doing all kinds of tiki drinks with it. If you look on our Instagram, you can see a bunch of
absinthe
recipes.
Is a fantastic.
It's incredible because most people go, oh, you just rinse a glass with it or you just sip it.
Yeah, Sazerac, rinse a glass.
No, it is gorgeous as a main player in cocktails.
And that's with the Sazerac as well. You're right. I've tried that one with a good rye whiskey. That one was really good. That one was really good.
Yeah, I add it to a lot of things that it's not normally in, you know, even just to give it a little different punch.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys specifically chose Vert, right?
Yeah,
Vert.
And that's a French word.
It's green.
That's just because green, right?
Yeah.
So in my research I was doing, there's different types and styles of absinthe.
Yeah.
So I had one called Blanche or Blanc,
mm-hmm.
which is French for white.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the difference in that one?
Very
It's not
green.
Colored?
That's it.
Mm-hmm. So absinthe isn't always colored. I drink absinthe when I'm... I do a lot of research.
Right.
When I'm traveling. So I drink absinthe quite a bit. And there was a guy selling absinthe at the Christmas market in Cologne last year. And I was trying his absinthe out. And most of it was clear that I was trying.
Okay. And then there's...
And he was Swiss. Yeah, he had Swiss absinthe.
So did it originated from Switzerland, did it not?
Yeah, I think so.
So I think it in the 1800s, it came from Switzerland. And I'm assuming they probably have badass... absinthe out there.
Yeah, there's a beautiful clear one. What's it called, Michael? We had it at Waldorf.
Oh, I cannot think of the name of it.
Either. But so they're very old family from the 1800s.
Are you guys planning on making a clear one?
I don't know.
And then there's another one that in Spanish has more citrus tones.
Yeah,
and it's absinthe.
Yeah.
Well, I'm curious to know, like, would you make a little bit more citrus tone?
We could definitely.
I feel like
that's something that's interesting to me is making it more
the first one.
Yeah, making the flavor different is more interesting to me than making the appearance different. You know?
Yeah, I think
because
I have a lot of friends and I found one that's a bohemian style. It's Czech style.
Yeah,
and it's how do you say the anise.
Anise or anise. Uh-huh. Either one's
anise
correct.
That's a licorice
anise is a licorice one that people like. And I probably 90% of my friends go, fuck absinthe, because I do not like licorice.
That was him.
That was
and
me.
That's a lot of people that come through our door
so
and say, I don't like licorice.
I would love, because I'm not getting a lot of licorice on this one. I'm getting it's easy, but it's not over the top, like in your face.
So here's what we do. For everything that we do, we like our spirit to have, to pay homage to the original spirit and what it's supposed to be. Gin is supposed to be juniper.
Okay.
It's not gin without juniper.
I just tasted your gin and it was like super dry.
You get a little bit of juniper, and it wasn't like crazy strong, but it just kind of lingers really well. Yeah. It's fantastic.
514 proof, yeah. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
That's it because wasn't... Ethan distills it very low and slow, yeah. So it's really soft.
Yeah. God, I have questions for him,
He's
too.
A genius.
He's genius at it. So like with gin, we make it juniper forward, but then the juniper kind of plays a prominent role. It's a primary thing that you're going to taste, but it gives way to other things. So we give, you know, we have citrus and bitter, and we have rosemary in there, so you get a little spiciness at the end, you know, so we want it to be a journey, not just a big hit of juniper, you know, which is some gins are just a big hit of juniper. Right. And with absinthe, we wanted it to be a journey as well. We wanted that licorice forward, that anise forward flavor, but we didn't want it to take over the drink because a lot of anise or a lot of absinthe out there is nothing but a big shot of licorice. I tell people it's oily ouzo.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and I don't like that. I want it to have a different profile. So what we did is a friend of mine, Aki Hummel, is a big absinthe freak. I mean, and he's got absinthe from all over the world. He's such a good guy. He has a 120-year-old bottle of absinthe from France that he let us try. We based that recipe for our absinthe on that 120-year-old bottle.
Did you get a sample of it?
I wasn't there. I didn't get to. Ethan got to sample it. I was out of town. I was working.
Barbie, did you get to?
They didn't. Ethan and his friend went that night to Aki's house.
So they sampled it, and Ethan came back, and he's like, we're going to make this absinthe.
Are
so
you having
we did.
Vodka and gin now?
Anyway, continue.
Yeah,
that
so,
one specifically. I want to know what you smell on that one.
So that's what it was. And a lot of times back in the day, absinthe wasn't necessarily a big licorice drink. It was an herbal drink. You know, it just depended on who made the absinthe. It's like wine, you know, you know, whoever it's, there were a lot of local producers of it. And absinthe wasn't always a big licorice forward drink. It had a lot of herbal notes for a lot of absinthe. So, you know, 100 years ago, 150 years ago. But now, you know, absinthe is associated with licorice.
There's a lot of friends, a lot of people that, for some reason, black licorice is like the most satanic food candy out there ever.
Man, I'm that
right. And like, I've had friends, hey, get those Twizzlers. Is there black licorice in there? No, go away. Yeah. You know, but so.
See, I love black licorice and he hates it.
But yeah. I feel like you're like the left handers of the world. Like, there's only a few of you out there.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And so, I'm curious to know, can you make one that's licorice free? But you would be going away from that original kind of what you're going for.
Well, in order to be absinthe, it has to have the anise or anise, however you want to say it.
But according
to
Czech
wormwood.
Style, it doesn't have it.
And I mean, I guess you could call it absinthe, and it could be whatever you want
so
it to be.
They call it Bohemia style absinthe.
Absinthe, yeah.
So it's like, I guess you can call it whatever.
You could do it, but at some point it's not, you know, for me, an absinthe has to have the licorice forward thing.
Coming
you know?
From a guy who doesn't like licorice.
He hates licorice.
But, you know,
that's why we always tell people, try it if you hate licorice.
Yeah. Hmm. So for me, absinthe has to have licorice. That has to be the first thing you taste, the first thing you smell, but it doesn't have to be the only thing you taste and the only thing you smell.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we wanted ours to have a more herbal body. You know, you get the licorice up front, then you get an herbal body and then a nice, smooth, sweet finish. And
I love the sweet finish, personally.
Yeah. And so it's, you know, and for 123 proof spirit, it drinks really nice, just straight.
It does, yeah.
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 And so, like Barbie said, what we've tried to do with all of our proofing, our ABV choices, we test them. And we go, it's a little too hot here. It's a little too blah. There, we like it at this point. But the Bosun's gin, it actually just happened to work out that it was right around 57% alcohol, that it was perfect, we thought.
Wow.
You know, maybe we could have gone a little higher, but that 114 was a good number. It had a lot of meaning. And so we stopped right there, and it's a good spot for it. Vodka at 80 proof is, you know, where vodka should be. You know, it's vodka's a clean white spirit, and it shouldn't be. You shouldn't have the astringency of a lot of alcohol coming at you. So we wanted to keep the vodka at 80 proof where people expect it. The absinthe was another animal because, you know, absinthe, like I said, it's, you know, 140 proof absinthe is not uncommon. Mm-hmm. And we tried it up there at that really hot 140 and all the way down. And it worked really well right around 123, 4, 5 proof.
And I'd say I'm glad you guys don't go just like as much as you can, highest ABV as possible. Because I feel like some people sell out, if you will. And go as strong as possible.
Or
you guys are going for like a nice palate.
Yeah.
Like you want the drink to be enjoyed.
Yeah. Or the other way, people go the other way and they go as low as possible because you make more money that way because you can produce more bottles. You water your booze down.
You guys are really going for drinkability and how it should be appreciated.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
It's a journey.
When you drink it, we want you to go on a journey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we would much rather produce a spirit that is exceptional and sells fewer bottles than a spirit that is mediocre and sells more bottles. I'm not in the mediocre game.
I applaud you guys for that commitment to quality.
Yeah, and we're not in the mediocre game.
And it will pay off at the end.
Of all of these that I've tried, I haven't tried the Shoshi. I was going to ask all of these are just phenomenal, like outstanding. I don't like vodka. Like I always think vodka.
I don't like vodka.
Oh, it's
like,
it's that.
Like, oh, it smells like hairspray. Mm-hmm, and I handed you, David, a glass of the vodka a second ago, and I was like, smell this and tell me what you smell. Because I've always heard that good vodka shouldn't really have a smell.
I can't put a smell
and shouldn't
it.
Have a taste.
Yeah.
And so like I poured some of that and I smelled it and I was like, did I accidentally pour water in my glass? Like, what's going
on? I don't smell anything. Am I wrong?
There's a little bit there if you get really, really up close. Well, but it's like
that's the
soft.
You'll get a tiny bit of the grapes.
It smells like grappa.
Yeah,
just very softly.
Search for it. It's not there.
And then the taste's the same. It was just smooth. The gin,
The gin was ridiculous.
Deceptive. I would never guess that's 114 proof gin.
No.
It's dangerous.
Because it was way
dangerous.
Yeah. Infinitely more smooth and drinkable than gins I've tried that are 80 proof.
Yeah. We love
impressed.
The gin. It's
but
fantastic.
That juniper's there and it's not over the top botanical where you're like this it's just a greenhouse. You're like, what is this going on?
You're not sure what you're drinking.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
And with our vodka, you know, one of the things, there's two schools of thought. I've got a couple friends who are big vodka aficionados. You know, I didn't know that was a thing until I started making vodka. But two schools of thought with vodka, you know, one is, you know, hey man, make this spirit that, you know, strong and, you know, blah, and it's white. Another school of thought is make a spirit that is, you know, flavorless, colorless, odorless with alcohol. And I'm like, those are both bullshit.
Bogus. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's horse. Anyway, that's just not, we didn't want to do that. We wanted, I mean, if anyone can make flavorless, colorless, odorless to the greatest degree possible, you're always going to get some element of the base spirit in there. But we're going to use grappa. I want you to taste just the very faintest little bit of grappa on the end of the palate so that you go, what was that?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I want
more
of
it. Grappa. You told me it was grappa. No, so like I knew. I was like, oh yeah, okay. This tastes like grappa.
Yeah.
But like, had you not told me, I would have spent the rest of the day like, what was the actual fuck was in that drink?
Yeah.
Like, it was just vodka, but what was in that?
Yeah. And we love it, you know, and we want, like Barbie said, we want you to be able to drink our spirits, you know, neat. We want them to go in a cocktail that you don't have to, you know, come up with your own new cocktail because there's so much going on in your mouth.
Which I hate sometimes.
Yeah. You know, so we want it to be something that you can use and you can build from. You know, it'll be a building block foundation of whatever cocktail you want to make. And Barbie's been doing, she's been going nuts in the kitchen making drinks and just, you know, trying out new things. And our bartender friends and people we know on Instagram have been using our spirits and making some fantastic cocktails.
Yeah.
You know, and it's pretty impressive, pretty amazing to see.
I'm fascinated right now, floored right now.
You got the shochu.
So why you just?
I poured a little shochu. I wanted to
tell us about
it. What'd you think on the nose?
I haven't tasted it yet. On the nose, I'm trying to figure out what it is on the nose. It's something toasted, something lightly toasted, but I can't figure out what it is that's lightly toasted.
We do get toast sometimes.
Yeah, like something, but it's not. It's not quite bread, so I can't say it's like regular toast.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some sort of grain, but there's something a little more, like meaty to it. Like, oh man,
isn't it interesting?
Yeah, very complex smell.
Such a cool spirit.
I've smelled it before, but I can't tell you what it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And,
yeah.
It's such a cool spirit to work with too. It's so fun.
So you guys are talking about making, you
almost
know,
almost like it's almost reminiscent of the smell of like the ocean.
Yeah.
Like seawater. Not like gross seawater, but like you're kind of near the beach and like that breeze comes in and there's something like toasty and roasty and maybe it's kind of a little chilly, not like a warm ocean. And there's just like something almost a little salty there. And I can't figure out what it is though.
Love it.
Wow. Something. Make a perfume out of that. Apparently.
Everybody gets something different from
and
it.
And I see
cool.
both of you guys right now, you guys are tickled about this.
Yeah, yeah. I love it, man.
Because you guys have passion about it.
Yeah, it's fun to watch people get something out of it that we didn't get from anyone else or ourselves, you know?
When somebody comes in the distillery and they say, I hate vodka, that is the first thing I want them to try.
Really?
Try this.
And they usually almost always go home with a bottle of it and say they can't believe that's vodka.
Oh, it's a beautful vodka. Yeah.
It's
beautiful in the freezer. It's beautiful in the fridge if you don't want to do anything with it, but it's also in your cocktail.
Yeah. I've never had a vodka that I'm like, oh man, I could drink that straight. But like that vodka, I'm like, yeah, I could put that in a glass. Like
a nightcap almost.
Ice or no ice and just sip it. It's a sippable vodka.
Do you guys have any plans of making flavored vodkas?
We don't have any plans to make
flavored. We're playing with that idea.
We would make one if it was the right flavor. Of vodka,
but not a fake flavored artificial thing. It would be really
pure,
authentic.
Organic kind of thing.
Exactly.
Right.
Something with real, true, authentic.
I feel like that's almost dangerous territory, if you will.
Yeah.
Because you guys have made a great base, and it's like, why mess with that?
Yeah, we don't really have, we've talked about it. We'll probably do rum at some point.
Will you do whiskey at some point?
We're working
on
some whiskey.
That's why we started a distillery.
We just haven't had time to go as crazy on that as we want. But
he's a Scotch guy.
In fact, Level Crossing, I saw your sticker over there on your laptop. Level Crossing has been working with us, and we've been turning some of their beer into whiskey.
Beautiful.
So we're working on that. We're working on an American Calvados-style apple brandy using American products, which I'm excited about because I love Calvados. So we're working on that. We're using Mountain West Hard Ciders is donating some stuff to us to help us with that. Or
that's
not
cool.
donating. We're
really
we're
cool.
in we're in a little business partnership with those guys.
That's awesome.
To make it happen. And they're awesome. And so we have an aged rum coming out. I mean an aged gin coming out. We've aged some gin in some rye barrels, and I just tried it yesterday, and it's amazing.
That sounds great. What kind of whiskey are you gonna make? I mean, it sounds like you're
single
making
malt.
A malt whiskey.
Yeah, single malt whiskey. I don't like many American single malt whiskeys because the American malt, American barley has a chemical compound, for most of it does, that my theory is that this chemical compound gives American single malt whiskey this aftertaste. And some people are like me and taste it and they agree. Some people can't taste it. But for me, my palate, I've had like two American single malts that didn't have this aftertaste that's just unpleasant for me, for my palate. So we found a guy who has a grain that doesn't have that chemical compound in it. It came from, I think, Canada 150 years ago, and he's been, they haven't changed their grains at all. So so we're going to make single malt whiskey using his grain and see what we got. You know, cool. I'm excited to make single malt whiskey.
Are you, you enjoy scotch, or is there, like, what kind of scotch is your go-to there? All of it?
Yeah, it depends on my mood.
Scotch has such a variety.
Yeah.
Oh, but we
flavors.
Had two new ones that are amazing.
Yeah, we just had, I had a scotch whiskey from Japan, a Fukano, which is incredible. It's all fruity and it's just neat.
Fruity scotch?
Yeah, it's neat. It's a really neat flavor profile. But yeah, so we have a friend who knows, she's kind of big in this world, and she sent us some products to try, and one of them is this one, Fukano. Another one's Daft Mill, which is a tiny little distillery in Scotland. They make it's a really light amber colored scotch, or yellow. It's almost yellow, but it's phenomenal. It's amazing. It's this family farm, and Barbie knows more about it. She's talked to her more about it than I have. But
she's a professor at Yale, and she teaches drinking culture and history.
Oh,
she's so brilliant, and she has our spirits. And she's wild about them.
Yeah.
She's and
awesome.
I mean, she knows more about spirits than probably most people on the planet.
That's awesome.
She's incredible. Yeah. But she visits, lots of distilleries in Scotland, and she said this man, like, they own the ground. He tills the ground with his own hands. They, plant everything with their own hands. It's really beautiful. But and so the Fukano that we just bought, the Fukano 16 year, which you can pick up at the
14,
DABC or 14, it's beautiful too.
Wow. Yeah, so she sent us a couple of bottles, and I was blown away by it. But I like, it depends on my mood. I like Speysides a lot. I like, Islas a lot.
You love Caribbean Cask, though. We always,
and
that's
Caribbean
kind of a
Cask
mainstay.
Is one of those, Balvenie Caribbean Cask.
Have you tried
Caribbean
that one, Balvenie Caribbean
amazing.
Cask? No. Done in rum, finished in rum casks. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's
you'd like that
really,
one,
really good. I love that scotch. It's just my go-to.
So we can't wait to do whiskey. Everyone else.
Yeah, we're doing whiskey, but
we
got another product. That do you want to tell them about the product that's coming out?
This
or are we gonna?
You
hold
brought
it?
This like blue vial of death.
So go ahead and taste it. The color comes from butterfly pea blossoms, PEA. So it's this really beautiful indigo color.
Heard about that the other day.
We used that at Strap Tank to make this beer called Cosmic Fog.
Did you use a syrup? You created like a syrup? Or
so we just steeped the butterfly pea flowers in the boil for like 5 minutes out of like the hour-long boil. And it made this pretty purple. And then we added edible sparkles to it because it's a sour and we just wanted people to... We just wanted to make a super weird...
Beautiful.
Very delicious beer, but that people could look at and just be like, that's crazy. And
you got to try that.
Yeah.
So we're making a butterfly pea blossom gin.
Okay.
And there are a couple of them out there, but I don't like the flavor profile of any of the ones out there. They look really cool. But the cool thing about, and Barbie can tell you about more about it, but the cool thing about this gin is that it changes color whenever you change the pH, and it has a special meaning to us, and I'll let Barbie take it from
Barbie,
there.
Please.
Yes, so my mom passed away from breast cancer. It'll be 2 years ago in December. It was her fourth round of breast cancer, and so when you change the pH, it turns pink, and so we thought, what better spirit to donate proceeds to breast cancer research than this one.
You guys are amazing.
Oh, so it's it's a beautiful one. Has lots of meaning. And we just lost a very close friend to in July to breast cancer also. So her name is also on the back of our bottle. Her name's Teresa. So my mom's Barbara and her name is Teresa.
That's awesome.
So we'll donate proceeds to breast cancer research.
That's incredible.
And also, you probably know with your Strap Tank beer, if you add egg whites to this, it turns like a sky blue. A baby blue. It's so beautiful. Wow. And you can get every color in between.
We didn't play with like the pHs though. We just made it purple.
Yeah.
And we were like, cool.
If you play with the pH, it changes colors.
We put a bunch of glitter in it.
Oh, like and that. So, that fun. Yeah, edible looks glitter. Like,
so that's what they call the cosmic fog because it just looked like this cosmic fog. Yeah.
You've probably seen this.
Yeah, that's the right. We talked about this the other day. Yeah.
So much of it.
I mean, it did clog our lines.
Do people go crazy over it?
Oh my God.
It's by popular demand that now it has to come back. We have to make it because it's so popular now.
Nice. Well, now you just will need this and you can get that with your beer.
Yeah. Still, we haven't had that for like a year and a half. And almost every time I bartend, I have people like, do you guys still have the cosmic fog?
Cosmic fog.
Pretty.
No.
It's beautiful.
No, we don't.
The only way I know this.
Some beers still might have sparkles in them every now and again because they just get caught in weird spots in the line.
Yeah.
We clean the line, there's like a sparkle that'll just hang out.
It's just extra sparkly.
Yeah. It's real nice.
Fantastic.
Real nice. It's gonna be nice with the gin though.
Yeah, that's our it's a floral gin that's designed to work well in cocktails and be just a delicious gin to drink neat.
Yeah, you can sip it neat.
It'd be beautiful.
There are other gins out there that are similar to this, but we did blind taste tests with sommeliers and this one won every time. Because the other ones are just kind of a big hit of juniper, and then you don't get anything.
Yeah.
This one, again, is a journey. Lavender, rose hips. The sweetness comes from the
orange peel?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you get a little juniper in there. We added you have to have juniper to make it gin, So.
Yeah.
But we didn't want the juniper to play the main role in this one. We wanted it to have a more floral, floral, fruity, sweet kind of profile.
But still one that people would go, that's a serious gin still.
Yeah.
Instead of like, oh, it's pretty and it's, I don't want it to be. Because we didn't want it to taste like perfume.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, thank
but
God.
We wanted to, know, he hates those.
We
he
wanted it to have body, not just, to me, some of those gins that taste like perfume, it's like a veneer of flavor. It's not really a body of flavor.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know. I don't
this one
it.
Holds up well. I like that. Well done, guys. Wow.
Yeah. We're excited.
Fascinating.
Excited about this one.
So are you guys, when you guys throw parties at the house, is it just like the most epic parties of all time?
We're homebodies, man.
Parties,
we don't really...
I know. He gets home from flying and he doesn't want to deal with big crowds or anything. He just wants to come home and hibernate because he's in Asia and Europe a lot. So it's just nothing but wall-to-wall people. I'm like, can we at least go out to HSL and get cocktails?
Just take Barbie. Here we go. Yeah. We'll go with you, Barbie.
Okay, we'll do it.
But going up. 2020, has it been a hard year for you guys? I mean, it's kind of a rhetorical question,
unspeakably
but
so.
You guys have, because you guys are what, almost 2 years old now?
A year and a half.
Yeah, we turned a year in May, end of May.
So then what's the future? What's the future hold for Holy Stone right now?
Kind of wish I knew.
Our trajectory was amazing.
We were
COVID.
Right.
Our trajectory last January I was really happy with what we were doing.
Right.
And then COVID hit, and we lost about 65% of our business because bars and restaurants,
absolutely.
They closed down and people's, spending habits changed. And we're on the higher end of most of our most of our price points, you know, most of our tiers, because the ADABC puts you in tier groups, you know, okay. tiers based on price. And so our gin is in the top tier of gins. Our vodkas, I think it's in the top. Yeah, it's in the top. Well, the tier for gin is massive. That doesn't make any sense. But our vodka's in the top tier of gin. Absinthe is in its own world over there in the bitters category.
Top tier shochu.
Yeah, shochu is more, you know, we're not in it at all because they won't take shochu. So, you know, for us, you know, that buying spree didn't come to us. It went to, you know, other distillers who make a lower price point.
Anyone product. Who has shatterproof bottles.
Exactly. Yes. That they got the lion's share.
All the bottom shelves, like don't put your eyes down there.
So, I mean, that's that's fine. I understand people's spending habits change with the economy, right.
But the DABC also was delisting at that time 900 products, and then
right in the middle of the
also
pandemic.
In the middle of the fight with Stone Brewing, which I saw in an article.
Oh yeah. Should we touch on that? Because I'm curious about
that.
It was
kind of everything was hit.
I love Stone, and why you're probably the same arrogant bastard like the Stone Brewing Company. The big, well, they became big. They started small. They became big,
and they're the ninth largest.
They started small
brewer, I think.
And he used to post videos
about going against. They had a lawsuit, if I will, and you're one of 100 ish people that because you have Stone in your name, they came
and wings on our logo.
Yeah. And they came across you guys.
And Arrogant Bastard is a good product for them. You know, the way they behave.
It fits them.
Here's what happened with Stone Brewing, and I got no love for those guys at all. But what happened was they got into a big infusion of cash, you know, $100 million or so. Wow. And they, around the same time, if I've got the timing right, Keystone changed their logo from one big Keystone word to Key and Stone.
Coors, right?
Beer, yeah. Mm-hmm. Molson Coors. Yeah, or Miller Coors, Molson Coors, I don't know, whoever it is. But Greg over at Stone Brewing saw an opportunity to shake down Coors, and he filed a $1 billion lawsuit for lost revenue for, you know, trademark infringement and, you know, marketplace, you know, confusion.
Sheer greed.
Yeah, you know, Stone Brewing hasn't sold $1 billion worth of product in their existence, and they won't, you know? It's an asinine lawsuit, and it's an obvious play to, you know, pick the pocket of Coors. I don't have any love for Coors. I don't care. You know, I'm not a beer guy, so, I mean, I like beer, but I'm not somebody who if you put two beers in front of me, I'd be like, okay. I wouldn't know what I was looking at. So for me, this whole lawsuit was kind of a little obvious. It was an obvious shakedown. But so anyway, from what I understand, they went to court, and the attorney for Coors said, "Why are you coming after us? There are 37 breweries that use Stone in their name in the register at the trademark office, and you haven't gone after a single one of them." And I guess they left that meeting and started filing oppositions to trademarks.
Anyone and
everyone. And it's not just breweries. It's vineyards. It's distilleries, a clothing place in Mexico, a pizza place in the Midwest. It's, you know, they covered a lot of bases, and they hit 100 or more small businesses with these oppositions and lawsuits, and they're putting people out of business. I spent more than $20,000 fighting these guys, and they had no chance of winning.
They don't care if they win, though.
They had no chance of beating me at the trademark office.
But that can put someone under right there.
It has put people under. And
Sawstone Brewery is still fighting to stay alive. Tiny little brewery in Kentucky.
Those guys are awesome. I love Sawstone.
They're so awesome. Follow them on Instagram.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, they're out of Moorhead, Kentucky family. Wow. You know, just a cool group of guys with great product. You know, and these guys at Stone went after Sawstone Brewing. Sawstone Brewing's a 3-barrel operation in a small building. They've been there for a long time.
Wow.
They're just a little local operation. And Greg came on, he did a video talking about how Sawstone's a bunch of bullies and they're bullying Stone around, and Stone won't be bullied by the 3-barrel operation in Moorhead, Kentucky.
3 barrels.
Yeah. Mm. You know.
Fascinating.
Here's the deal. Bottom line, Greg Koch, or whatever his name is over there at Stone Brewing, will walk over the dead bodies of small businesses to get a payday.
Yeah,
that's sad.
Absolutely.
That's really sad.
It's heartbreaking.
And the fact that you guys are, you know, still here, thank God, because Stone, I mean, this is beautiful. You know, the name, just because the Stone's in the name, whatever. That's beyond that.
Well, thank you.
But when we found this out, I know Wyatt and I were talking about this, and we even talked with Diaz about this. And it was, Diaz is one of her favorite breweries. Like, oh, look, because Arrogant Bastard is one of my first, like, craft, like, oh, shit, right?
Yeah.
But I have yet to buy one because of that, since this whole argument.
Good.
Because
she said she's not making boozy cupcakes anymore.
And that's just not, what?
It's not. It goes back to that community. Man.
It's like we all should be in this together. But why the hell are you doing? It's just like I said, asinine.
It's asinine.
It's ridiculous.
Well, and you know, okay, for us and for Sawstone, you know, whenever they went after Sawstone, Sawstone tried to get tried to negotiate with them and get a coexistence agreement, which is what you do, and they refused, and they sent them a cease and desist letter to stop using their name, you know, instead of trying to negotiate in good faith.
They could have done that with a phone call.
Yeah, they could have. The agreement we ended up with Stone Brewing, we could have handled in less than an hour a year ago. Saved me $20,000, $22,000 in a year of my time dealing with these
people. And we cannot garner any of that back.
Yeah, we can't. You can't. I can't go after them for it, wow. You know? And so, I'm in good enough financial shape that we can absorb this, but it's not an easy thing to absorb. I mean, especially during COVID.
And they'll probably
especially during COVID.
Yeah. Sawstone is, you know, they're having a much harder time. They're a much smaller operation. They didn't have, the finances to support something like this. And I mean, they're having a tough time because of that.
Well, we'll reach out to them, see if we can help. You know, by any means, you know, shout outs to them. Sorry about that sensitive subject. I mean, it's kind of a story. Like, it's a
big people
one.
Need to know. I mean, it people need to know who they support, you know, and if you're going to support, if you're going to, you know, if you like Stone Brewing and you don't, you know, and you want to support them anyway, then go nuts. But if you want to support local manufacturers, don't support those guys. I mean, they're not local. They're a big brewery now. They're the man at this point.
Not only are they not local, they're also going after people who are local.
Yeah.
And Greg Koch used to do videos on YouTube saying how the big guys were stepping on him and wouldn't allow him to
brew. Irony to an eye there.
He calls himself Beer Jesus. I feel like that's just all you need to know. Beer Judas.
Boo on that item.
Yeah, he's Beer Judas.
Just wants all that sympathy.
That's a thumbs down.
All that sympathy. That poor guy. Sounds like he's had a rough
time. Then the other thing they're doing, this is awesome. So they laid off a lot of their staff right when COVID hit. Just laid them off, and they told them, you're not coming back. You know,
even though they got that massive cash infusion,
they laid off a bunch of their staff. Said you're not coming back. You know, those guys have no loyalty.
Yeah. Wow,
I have a good lots of good friends in San Diego, but one of a close family friend, she said that you can't hardly get any good local beers in San Diego because Stone makes the restaurants sign agreements that they won't bring in any other local
only
beers.
Their stuff.
Wow. Yeah, one of our friends who owns
ridiculous.
A
San Diego is like such a hotbed of craft beer too. Yeah. They're trying to
it's
like
a melting pot.
Yeah,
I can't believe that.
Damn.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. So going on, still moving to San Diego. What's hopes for you guys going forward? Like, what if you guys? I know 2020 has been hard. 2021 hopefully is a light at the end of the tunnel, if you will. But what's the hope for Holy Stone?
You want to take it?
Oh, we just love to keep growing and keep creating things that people love. I mean, obviously whiskey, we're really excited to, you know, it'll take us a few years.
We're excited for that chapter if you guys remember that one. Absolutely.
Well, but, and grow into, we're fully licensed in California now.
Oh, cool.
And then we'll probably push into Oregon.
Yes.
Yeah. So we would love to, you know,
love to grow that.
Keep growing.
And I mean, even if the man's putting their thumb against you, like, you guys keep pushing, keep going on. That's
he won't back down.
And the other thing we really would like to see in 2021, I mean, it helps us, but we'd like to see bars and restaurants get back to where they were. You know, we'd like to see, we want our friends to survive. We want our friends to succeed. And, you know, they're responsible for our growth, you know, and we want,
and they're so talented
and they're so loyal and they're so just good. So we want, you know, we want our friends in the bar and restaurant world to make it, you know, we want our friends in the brewing world to make it, we want everyone in the distilling world to make it. And this is one of the things that a lot of people don't seem to grasp that maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think I am. But, you know, we're such a small scene in Utah. There are only 17, 18 distillers in Utah. I mean, there's room for all of us. And one person's success helps everyone, I think, because it brings Utah more attention for the distilling scene.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I don't think that,
not every distiller agrees
with that, but for me, it's like, I want everyone to be successful because that just makes, you know, people look around, they go, hey man, Utah's got a hopping distilling scene. Who else is there? You know?
Absolutely. And,
if one distillery is good and another distillery isn't as good, they're not going to sell.
Right.
Right. So they've got to make better shit just to compete. Like,
And we're not each other's competition. I mean, that's our competition.
Just to stay open at that point. Like,
yes.
Yeah, Seagram's, Bacardi. Those are my competition.
We love supporting everybody. It's our favorite. We love doing collaborations. We love locking arms. Love we that. Started tip for tip initiative for the bartenders.
For the bartenders, I saw that.
It was really fun. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. They could get tipped directly through the Venmo.
Oh, you guys are so awesome. Yeah. So if you guys really are, keep trucking on, keep doing it. Yeah. What, as the Tastemasters, as our podcast, what can we do to help you guys in any way possible?
You're doing it.
You're doing it. Yeah, man. Just keep putting the word out. You know, tell people, you know, whatever it is, even if it's not us, if it's, you know, if you have a local spirit that you want to get, you know, push to get it in your local liquor store, talk to your bar managers, you know, do that kind of thing. And, you know, just the exposure and talking to you guys and having this, you know, awesome conversation is doing it, you know?
Awesome. Yeah. And that's what Y and I were trying to do is when we started this thing a year ago is we're just trying to bring the art, I mean, the craft from the artists. Yeah. You guys are artists and this is your craft and you're showcasing it. And it's beautiful and it's local and it's here in Utah.
Yeah.
Of all places. Right down the road, Utah gets this huge, like, neg vibe, but it's here.
Oh, you know, I tell everyone from out of state, Utah sucks. Tell your friends.
It's really ugly.
Because, you know, I don't want
to keep it for myself.
Yeah, I don't want you. Yeah. I just
want to change the weather. It's all, but besides that, it's great.
But when you do come to Utah, come see us, you know?
All right. We're gonna do this, a news episode with you guys, if you don't mind.
No,
Wyatt, go ahead and introduce that part.
So new segment we're trying out. This is our second time doing it. What did we call last time? We called it beer news and other
almost
interesting
news
stuff.
And other stuff?
Almost news and other stuff. That's what it was. It's not like quite news. But do you want to start off with
absolutely.
Our first story?
So Squatter's Craft Beer is now coming out with their Juicy IPA at 19.2 ounces. So not just 12-ounce cans. They're releasing big boys, tall boys.
Nice.
And so 19.2-ounce packages. So I was going to ask you guys, you guys have a favorite beer? By chance? I know you're not a huge beer,
not
but...
a beer guy, really, but...
When we go sailing, though, you...
Yeah, we go sailing and drink a lot of beer, but drink whatever's local, you know, like if we're in the BVI, drink a lot
Are we doing like a light lager? Are we doing an amber? Are we doing a
stout?
You
know, honestly, dude, you're going to think I'm a wimp, but, you know, when I drink beer, I like something like Pacifico's. You know, just like...
Dude, that's
nice
his favorite
light.
Beer.
My, Mexican, so basically, like, the Pacifico with the lime is my favorite go-to.
Yeah.
If it's
more just of like
not
a Modelo
local.
Guy.
Yeah. Modelo?
I don't judge
I like Modelo Especiales. I don't
so
like Modelo.
If you're a wimp, I'm a wimp. Like that's all I got to say. Because I'm a wimp, then. Call me a wimp, then.
Yeah.
Pacifico's the OG.
Yeah,
that's good beer. Like,
sorry.
That's my beer. That's what
I
drink.
I want to bring you back on, Mike, and try to get you to, like, craft beers in Utah. Just see if we can play the palate.
Don't get me wrong. I don't dislike beer.
Right, but I want to see if I can get you and just like, this brown ale is really good.
Okay, yeah.
There are two pilsners
IPAs,
that I can think of. There are two pilsners that right off the bat I'm like, I think we should.
Oh,
one is from
I'm
Salt Flats, the P1 Pilsner, and the other one we tried last
Hopkins
week
Brewing.
From Hopkins.
Yeah, we got
John
some beers for you.
Okay.
We're bringing you guys back on.
Let's do it.
Barbie,
do
not
it.
John
beer.
Okay, let's do it. I'm not a big beer drinker.
Will you drink one?
But I will. But the craft beers I've had in Utah are so beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've loved them.
And there is a beauty behind it, and that's what we're trying to showcase, and we're going to bring you guys back on.
There's some good ones and some bad ones, for sure, but we'll bring you guys back on
good. We
try
need
to
know
work our way
which.
Through some of the better ones.
I need an education, because I don't know
and we haven't been to
much
Strap Tank
about
yet.
Beer.
So let us
and we
want to
go.
Okay. Yeah.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Wyatt.
So mine isn't necessarily news, because all the news that I was finding was super boring, but it's a little bit of history. And since I noticed, you know, the Bosun's Navy Strength Gin and all these... You know, there's like Bravo, Zulu, NATO phonetic alphabet, obviously like military terms. So we're gonna talk about some Navy toasts. They have day of the week toasts.
They do.
Ooh, day of the week.
Yeah, and so this is from the Royal Navy. So originally with the British Navy, and then moved on to like the Canadian Navy still uses these, and the British Royal Navy does
I'm
well. I don't know about the U.S.
here.
Navy. I don't know about the world's finest Navy, but I know the other lesser navies do for sure.
Well, the lesser navies do a lot of things.
Yeah, they do a lot of things. But I'm sure the U.S. Navy has their own toasts they do on days of the week. But so the traditional toast for Monday. Our ships at sea. That's what the toast is. So you go, our ships at sea, and then put it back. Tuesday is for our men. Wednesday is for ourselves. Thursday is for a bloody war or a sickly season. Friday is for a willing foe and sea room. Saturday is I'll say something, and then you reply. So you'll reply with, may they never meet. Okay, remember that.
Oh,
may they never
I know
meet.
This one.
And I'll say, to our wives and sweethearts,
may they never meet.
Yeah, okay, there we go. And to Sunday is to absent friends.
Oh, I like that one.
Absent friends.
Oh, I was going to say,
I like a worthy foe and plenty of sea room. That's a good one.
Yeah, that's a really good one. I think I think Friday night might be my favorite night as well. Yeah,
there you go, Mike. You can start using that one if you want.
So if you toast,
You can find these on the internet. Just look up Navy Toast.
Navy
it's like
Toast.
The first that's thing right. that comes
yeah.
up.
Yeah, I've looked them up because I thought that'd be fun to incorporate into our tastings.
Yeah.
At the end, whichever day it is.
Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays.
There you go. Yeah. Love it.
But again, you can have like the your whiskey can be like the May They Never Meet whiskey or something.
Nice.
That's great.
I like it. Right.
What's this Bravo Zulu?
Okay, Bravo Zulu is a Navy term. Bravo Zulu is kind of a catch-all for, hey, well done or good job. And so, so the Bravo Zulu, those flags are semaphore flags, and it means well done in Navy parlance.
Yeah. I was trying to, the flags looked familiar. I was like, those are like NATO flags for sure. And I know the Bravo Zulu is obviously BZ.
Yeah, BZ.
But, yeah. I was curious. I've been trying to figure out what Bravo Zulu like stood for something that I was trying to figure out this whole time. But
yeah, it just means good job. So, nice. You know.
Cool.
And it's I think it's very appropriate for you guys.
Oh, thanks.
And
that
really is. I think we will end on that one. But thank you guys so much for coming on, taking time
really
out of your day
it.
And sharing your spirits with us.
Thanks for waiting for
both
us.
Like physical spirits and spirits.
Likewise, thanks for creating this show.
Yeah, this
must
is awesome,
be a passion
man.
Of yours.
It's fun to have you guys on.
Sweet. And then I guess until the next beverage, bros.
This has been another episode of The Tastemasters. You can find us on Instagram @the_Tastemasters, on Twitter @TheTastemasters, and on Facebook as The Tastemasters. Like, share, subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends, and thanks for listening.
Produced and recorded @Fuse Audio. Give them a follow @Fuse_Audio.